weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a massive thank you to the two Johnnies and Afric for the afternoon entertainment. It is Monday, May 20th, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly reflect on the Premier League season as Manchester City are crowned 4 in a row champions. We'll also look forward to two key League of Ireland clashes tonight as Stephen Kenny and Damien Duff go head-to-head in Inchicore, and Shamrock Rovers seek stability at home to Derry City.
In golf, Remy Burns looks back on a notable US PGA Championship that saw Shane Lowry fall just short despite a third round for the ages. Niall Moran will take us through the big talking points from both the Leinster and Munster Senior Hurling Championship. And Joe O'Neill from IrishBoxing.com will have his say on Tyson Fury's deceit to Alexandra Usyk, and the good news for Irish boxing with the victory of Anto Kakachi.
Great news indeed. We'll also wrap up all of today's sports news headlines. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 515 552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Ruby Walsh, how are you, sir?
I am good, Shane Dawson, not a bother, thank God. Alan Colley, how are you?
I'm great, Ruby. Good to be here. Shane, good evening.
Good evening, Alan. Alan loves a Monday. Loves a Monday. He's very excited
Alan
to be here.
Alan likes every day of the week.
I do like every day of the week, but I love a Monday. I love a Monday show.
Okay.
Looking back on all the sport, because obviously we're up to our eyeballs with sport every weekend, which we love, and I love reviewing it and looking back on it. So,
well, weekend sporting highlight then. We always start off on a Monday with that.
Yeah, there's a couple, Shane, really, but I think the Munster hurling has just taken a whole life of its own, obviously, over the last probably 3-4 years. And the game again yesterday was just absolutely unbelievable. Now, the finish, I obviously watched a little bit of the Sunday game, and it probably wasn't the way you'd want the game to finish, and it was a bit harsh, but I think the umpire did well in a difficult situation. But the games are just unbelievable in terms of the drama, and they take on a life of their own. So I think that would probably be, and also I watched the golf then, and I thought the golf was brilliant. I've been turned off the golf. I used to be a big golf fan in terms of the majors, and I've been turned off it ever since Liv came in, because I just think they've sold out a little bit, and I've lost a lot of respect for the players.
But the people who haven't sold out.
Oh yeah, like, so the likes of Shoffley and those boys, and I was. And,
that may,
and,
not make you love them more.
No, because I think it's affected the whole sport and the game. So it's not what it used to be for me when you have all the top players playing, even in the PGA events every Sunday night, not just the majors. And as I say, I've lost a lot of respect for a lot of those players who I would have always admired. But the likes of Shoffley in the major, because he suffered a lot of, basically the narrative was he just can't get over the line, and he's had a lot of second place finishes, and to lead from start to finish when everybody else was queuing up, it'd be like Ruby on a horse out in the lead and everybody queuing up, and you almost feel like you're a sitting duck. I thought he was absolutely brilliant to hold it together, because they really, Bryson DeChambeau pushed him and pushed him.
I only had to do it for a maximum of 7 minutes. He had to do it for 16 hours, a little bit more, but 18 hours when you look at it. Was it four and a halves or 4 fives, 20 hours even.
Yeah. And you always felt
as well.
You always felt you were on an aeroplane. They couldn't catch you anyway.
Exactly. Just go in the right direction. Don't get it wrong. Don't fall over the last if you can.
You make it sound very simple. You make it sound so simple.
And Shoffley made it look simple, to be fair, but as Ruby said, 4 days of that. It was good viewing, wasn't it, Ruby?
It was great viewing and great golf. And I guess, know some people, purists will say a 20 over was the course a fraction on the easy side, it was really low scoring, but I thought that made for really attacking golf. They were able to hold the balls on the greens and they were going at flags, and I thought it was entertaining anyway. But Remy Burns will have his say, and he'll tell us a bit more on that one. Shane, had you a highlight?
I'll be really boring, and Shell's getting over line grinding out Friday night. Sean
About
Boyd,
time they got to win.
I know, yeah, exactly. I'm going to be boring and predictable. On horse racing though, Ruby, there was racing in Nice yesterday.
There was. Yesterday was Royal Ascot Trials Day, is the word you would use for it. Took place yesterday afternoon at Nice, and there was some good talent on show, Shane. Plenty of horses that will hopefully make it their way. Treasure Island, Aesop's Fables, were both good winners, and obviously Buccaneer of Ferte, but give me the Beat Boys and the Lacking Stakes, which was the feature race. Fairy Godmother was very good too in the filly sprint stakes, 2-year-old filly, so she'd be heading possibly for the Queen Mary in Ascot. Bucanero Fuerte and Gimme the Beat Boys, you'd imagine, with Bork going for the Commonwealth Cup, which is the 3-year-old sprint on the Friday of the Royal Meeting. But yeah, look, some really good race, and the flat season is starting to take shape and get going. Irish Guineas weekend coming up this weekend at the Curragh. 3 great days, starts Friday night, 2,000 guineas Saturday, 1,000 guineas Sunday. So it's all cranking up and going in the right direction. Bit of sunshine too, fast ground, suit the flat horses.
We might dig into that tomorrow with yourself, Ruby. We might get your
Ruby, obviously your national hunt, but do you love the flat as much and get the same buzz off it?
I do enjoy watching flat race. I'm not going to lie, I'm running the mill flat race and I have a massive interest in, but I do like good flat racing, Alan. Yeah, and I've gone to Royal Ascot for years. I've been to Epsom Derbies, Melbourne Cups, Breeders' Cups. I was at the Arc last year in France, which was an incredible weekend. But I really enjoy. I love top quality sport and top quality flat racing is really, really good. But look, I can't say I'm a massive lover of Ardbeg National Hunt racing either. So it's not one over the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And before we go to Niall Moore, and also a highlight of the weekend, Charlie Maudsley securing automatic Olympic standard in the 400 metre, running 50.72 seconds at a meeting in Poland, was actually very notable.
Tell you the one thing I noticed, Shane, which was quite remarkable. You watched last Sunday in Páirc Cuíve when Cork beat Limerick,
yeah,
and the crowd mobbed the pitch and the players were there for God knows how long.
Mm.
Signing autographs.
I know what you're going to say.
Did you watch the Man City players running off the pitch yesterday when they won the Premier League? They couldn't. There was lads moving faster than they'd moved all season to get off the pitch in case they had to stand with a fan who paid in through the season and wanted a picture with
a different culture. A different culture. I think it's a safety thing as well. If you ever Indian or Pakistan cricket matches, they just go for it and they take the stumps with them as well because fans mob on. However, listen, we're losing the run of ourselves. We've news headlines to get through before we chat hurling with Niall Moran. And that is Mayo. Bad news actually for Mayo football. Mayo have confirmed captain Paddy Durkin has suffered a cruciate ligament injury, ruling him out for the remainder of the year. Durkin came on in the 56th minute of Saturday's 20-8 victory over Cavan and Castlebar, but suffered the injury late on in the game. In association football, former Celtic manager Neil Lennon has been appointed head coach of Rapid Bucharest. Rapid finished 6th in the Romanian top flight following their final match on Sunday. Lennon, of course, was one of the leading candidates to become manager of the Republic of Ireland and returns to coaching after an 18-month hiatus. The 52-year-old led Omonia Nicosia to Cypriot Cup success in 2022 and then to the Europa League group stage as well. And the worst kept secret in football, former Feyenoord coach Arne Slot has officially been confirmed as Jurgen Klopp's successor at Liverpool a few moments ago, so we will be chatting to Alan and Stephen about that in due course. But one of Alan Colley's highlights of the weekend was hurling, and Ruby was talking about the pitch invasions and everything, the passion of Munster hurling. Niall Moran, it's alive and well.
Superb weekend, weather to match. Rebels back in tow, so there's a bit of controversy thrown into the mixer. It was nice for the Monday morning coffee. So it's really, look, the thing is really set up in both provinces for the weekend ahead. Probably even more so in Leinster, where it's a lot more even Steven, where the permutations probably outnumber it. And I'm sure, look, for the Dubs, they're very disappointed going away from Parnell Park, probably a chance left behind them. Like, Kilkenny looked vulnerable. It's not something you'd normally associate with Kilkenny. They looked kind of devoid of confidence, and even just some of their general play was quite poor. But again, the one thing that they always stay true to is they found a way to win, and they had a little bit of luck. Maybe there was a small bit of overcarrying and all Cody's kind of winner. But again, they stayed alive, and you know, it's kind of like the old BG classic here at the moment. Kind of staying alive seems to be the tune for a couple of days ahead. And so look, it's been phenomenal. Probably the biggest pity is that we're probably more than halfway through the hurling championship at the moment, which is, look, that's for another day's conversation.
It is for another conversation, but sticking with Leinster, I mean, at half time on Saturday, Antrim were giving Galway a good game. Obviously, a red card then swung it, but talk about permutations. Galway are going to feel the heat this weekend, aren't they?
Galway are going to feel the heat, and I suppose while a lot of the focus in Monday morning's papers are all about the perceived injustice, maybe, that David Fitzgerald felt. By God, when you're looking at it on television, Antrim are the team who have most have grievances about. Watching it there in real time, just the nature of Ryan McGarry sending off. Look, there's a slight contact with the head, but Jesus, totally accidental. Like, it was, there has to be a line whereby accidental collisions have to be allowed for, and it wasn't dangerous in any shape or form. And then kind of followed what was kind of semi-dubious enough penalty, and from that Galway Seymour was going on the home straight. But I suppose for Antrim and Danny Gleeson now means that they've been carried on a winner takes all. And so sometimes there we all the attention goes with the higher profile teams and whatever injustice they might be done against them. But I think for Antrim, they showed great resolve in coming back from the defeat they had the previous week. And again, like it has to be said, you know, all the players this week, about James McNaughton in this year's championship, has been exceptional for Antrim in all the games. He's exceptional again on Saturday. But yeah, look, Leinster is, like, even looking at the score difference, like you've, like Dublin are, well, Galway are fourth of the six teams on plus 17 and Kilkenny are plus 34, whereas if you look at the same score difference, Munster is complete opposite, where you take a team like Clare are on zero, like slightly smaller than Munster, and on zero score difference. So I suppose, look, will the score difference come into it? Probably will on next Sunday on top of everything else.
Before we get on to Munster, just final one on Leinster. You mentioned Dublin Galway, obviously do or die in Salt Hill next weekend. Will Dublin look back at this weekend as a missed opportunity and that's where the Leinster championship cost them, or will they be motivated by being able to put it up to Kilkenny and hopefully get one over Galway?
I suppose over the last number of years, like, they haven't feared Kilkenny, and again that goes back maybe to their previous underage pedigrees, they haven't feared them. But look, home advantage, it does count for an awful lot. But I suppose, look, Micheál Donoghue is over Dublin and he'll be very familiar with the surrounds of Salt Hill, especially for the impact that something like the wind would have on those kind of games. And again, like, Galway are struggling for a little bit of confidence. There's a lot of teams at the moment that are, so I mean, they are struggling, like, so even in terms of flow. So after this weekend, the only team you could argue have flow are Cork, and literally 8 days ago we were saying the Cork were out of the championship. So it just tells you the topsy-turvy nature of this championship, and it is about staying alive, because the longer you're in it, the more chance you have of dictating events. And look, you would still think that Kilkenny and Galway would have enough in their artillery on all previous known form to still be contesting the Leinster final, and that'll probably bring us back to where we were. But I suppose in both cases there's a lot of gaps after repairing. And in Kilkenny's case, like, I suppose only for John Donnelly's continued reign of form, like, he scored 7 points in play, it was incredible. Jordan and Ramsey and Cody chipped in at 1-3, but only for that, I suppose, like, they would have been under pressure the last couple of days out. So again, it's been an incredible championship so far in terms of competitiveness. Maybe not in terms of the all-out hurling that we would have seen across the board in previous championships, but definitely in terms of competitiveness, it's probably may end up being the most competitive of all these round-robin championships over the last couple of years.
Niall, I was slagging a colleague of mine in Willie Munnell's a few weeks ago about Wexford hurling, but they haven't half swung it around since I was slagging them. And, like, from being nearly relegated last year, if they can do a number on Kilkenny next weekend, they're in a Leinster final.
Well, they've done it before, and I'll tell you one thing, if, do you know what I mean, they've shown their fighting qualities going back to 200 years ago. When it comes to fighting and dying on your back, so I'd say there's no better men than Wexford when it comes to it. And, like, the results have been pretty good under Keith Rosser. Again, if you're putting them in an accumulator for a bet, they might let you down a couple of times this year. But, like, if you look at them across the board, they have made great strides. And again, I suppose one of the things is they have all the best players starting to come back onto the pitch, which they wouldn't have had earlier on in the year. And even Conor McDonald over the weekend got 2-3. Rory Tanner back up with 5 points. Throw that into Lee Chin, who's probably one of the best hurlers in the championship to date. Now you're talking about three top-class forwards. And even back in the backs, they've Liam Ryan, Matthew O'Hanlon. Wexford, no, there's no duds. Like, Wexford are far from it. And so, I mean, would Wexford be capable of taking on any of these so-called brilliant teams a month? I think they would on current form. So, look, it's just intriguing. There's going to be a lot of lads tuned into the old transistor radios and
the wireless.
On Sunday come 2 o'clock and anything can happen.
Wexford Rebellions and Transistor. I'm loving this conversation already, Niall Warren, before we even chat about Munster hurling. Listen, give credit to Cork. Their defence was brilliant. Alan Setanta Connolly with a performance for the ages. But their opponents, Tipperary, obviously the post-mortem there will begin for Liam Cahill and Tipperary. What's gone wrong?
Do you know what? It's wonderful to be able to come on this radio show every Monday and pontificate about knowing every result that had happened on the Saturday and predicting the demise of teams and demise of counties. But you say what's gone wrong, like, as in
like, it's very, very hard. My heart goes out to Ian Callanier, number one, because the lads will tell you, geez, he should have left the job for another couple of years, whatever it is. No, Ian Callanier's an honourable hitman. He's as good a coach or a manager as is out there. He did it. He has done as much with his resources as is possible. I would say, my argument would be that two things would be very dominant in my mind after yesterday. I thought physically Tip were on completely different planets to what Cork were on. I thought they really struggled for pace. I thought that when, as the game wore on, especially on a hot day with 20 minutes to go, no different to the Limerick game, they were just devoid of energy. And I suppose the starting point for any team, and I suppose we saw this with maybe Jimmy McGuinness in his first coming as Donegal manager, you have to take each and every one of your players to a physical level beyond all known form. And at least then you can tick that box off, and then maybe the psychological and obviously the skill elements come into it. And I just think, looking at Tipperary, they don't look as physically primed as a lot of the other teams in this year's championship. And maybe that's over a number of years, so that takes time. And look, obviously people would have touched on a lot of the older guys who, again, owe nothing to Tipperary hurling, but there comes a point in your life when you actually can't physically get to that really top level, because obviously your body will break down under injury. So I suppose that is would be the first thing that I would say that they'll have to address. And that's not an overnight solution, and that's not at the hands of any one person. That's a kind of a county-wide issue. And so then the thing that probably really irritated a lot of the Tipperary people, and maybe Liam and his players, of course, is that just when the second goal went in, like in the third quarter, they just fell apart again. And again, look, I've seen enough of those and been part of enough of those, and that's probably psychological scarring that's built up over a number of years, not just this year. And look, unfortunately, sometimes that can only be eradicated maybe with a turnover of players. And again, that takes time. And is Liam Callan the man to do it? He probably is. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know if you're going to get any better than Liam Callan and Michael Beavens at your side. So again, it's very hard to accept that as a Tipperary fan, that you have to have that patience. But ultimately, like, we're all raving about Cork today. Like 8 days ago, we were saying they're coming on 20 years without an All-Ireland. So the wheels turned very quickly. And even for Tipperary tonight, that we're going into Limerick, we're seeing them in a Munster Minor final. They're in the Munster Under 20 final. So, you know, if you keep on producing teams, they're the Hardy Cup champions over the last couple of years. You know what I mean? They're heavily dominating the main teams at the given level. So like, they are doing their best. Like, it's not that they're not producing hurlers, but maybe just physically they're a little bit off where they need to be. Mm.
Well, they're definitely out of this year's championship anyway, and they're the only team in Munster who can't go through. Clare kept their hopes alive. Controversial or not for you?
Yeah, the matchbox was on fire. There's a tinderbox there as it was going last night, yesterday. Geez, it was just, even to pay credit to both those teams, we're watching it in real time, and in any senses with the heat, it was just, the place was just so, so warm. Clare, look, they'll be disappointed in the sense of their conversion rate. I think they're up on 53%, someone's saying, for the conversion rate. Again, got goals, and that's goals in matches, but they needed to win matches there yesterday. Probably haven't been as fluid, consistently fluid as what they had in the league, and that'll be a little bit of a disappointment to them. But again, Tony Kelly back into the mixer yesterday, they're starting to come back to a full hand. I know Dave McInerney is missing, he'll probably be back over the next couple of weeks. Look, for Waterford, was Davey right to feel aggrieved? I think he was right to feel aggrieved. Maybe not about 65, but in my mind and in the spirit of the game, I would have expected that there would have been a play from the puck out. And that to me was, I would be exceptionally irritated in what had happened there. Now, do you go about it in the manner in which you did? No, you don't. But, I mean, all the talk today is about Davey, when there was a member of the Clare backroom team also involved. Do you know what I mean? And who probably knew what he was doing in antagonising Davey, because it didn't take a whole point to antagonise him. So, look, I suppose that's something that played out. It'll be soon forgotten. Clare move on, Waterford move on. But I suppose, look, apart from me, he feels sympathy for Davey, and definitely in the sense that they should have been given another play, because that would be the spirit of the game right the way throughout the country, from club level, every level, all the way through. And there had been enough delays in the 70th minute it went to allow them that. And I think maybe if they'd been allowed it, and nothing had come of it, I think it'd be a little bit easier to accept. But sometimes I think Davey might be the victim of his own reputation. I think yesterday was one of those days.
That's a very valid point to finish on. We've ran out of road for a hurling chat. Niall Moran, thank you as always. Marie will be previewing all of the hurling later on in the week, because it is a cracker of a Sunday, both in Leinster and in Munster.
Game on.
Golf.
But it is time to chat golf in the company of Raimi Burns as we reflect on the US PGA Championship. And Raimi, thanks so much for taking the call. First and foremost, in your opinion, how will the 2024 US PGA Championship be remembered?
Well, it started off very weird, didn't it? I mean, we had Rory winning last week, and then some obviously private news coming out, and then obviously, you know, Scheffler being arrested for a short time. But and then you have Shane Lowry, who produced that scintillating 62 in the third round, got himself right up there with a chance to win. But the one impressive thing for me was there were so many players played really well. They played with their A game. It was a phenomenal shootout. You know, you go to Hovland, Justin Rose, Shane, Schauffele. You know, so many golfers played so well, which was a credit to the game. DeChambeau, I thought, brought a huge advancement in tour golf. The American Wonder Boy won the U.S. Amateur, U.S. Open champion, firing on all cylinders, phenomenal with the crowd, phenomenal with the little kid that someone grabbed the ball off, went over and got the ball back off him, etc. I think he drew an awful lot of fans into the game, and obviously, you know, Schauffele was sort of second last against Rory, and we all knew how well he's been playing all year. He's had a lot of seconds, a lot of close chances, Olympic champion, and he proved himself last night, the way he played, the way he conducted himself, with everyone firing at him. There's huge pressure. You could see it in his face, and he was a worthy winner. But I think golf won last night. The Masters was a little bit of a little bit of a downslope with major championship, but I think golf really came to the fore. The game came to the fore last night, and I think it was a wonderful credit to the players who made birdies and eagles and put a show on, put an entertainment on for the golf fans.
Well, that's what it was, Raimi. It was entertaining. I mean, Xander Schauffele -21, Bryson 20 under, Victor Hovland 18 under, and even when you look at Bryson and Xander Schauffele, 2 bogeys, 1 double bogey for Xander, Bryson 3 bogeys in 4 rounds. I mean, it was incredible scoring.
It's incredible in a major championship, and you know the golf course. We know we can maybe have a little bit tighter fairways, but I mean, I think the course, you know, people want to see birdies. They don't want to see people going around and one over par and it being impossible and the green speed being impossible. There was a little bit of rain that fell early, and maybe the organisers didn't quite want that. But I think it was great to see birdies, and obviously they're so good with their short games. The rough was so heavy. Shane had a great chance as well after 6, and then he flew a couple of greens. Unfortunately, short-sighted himself. You don't do that in the PGA Tour, but a wonderful golf tournament. The standard of golf was just so high. It was one of the best standards of golf I've seen in the major for a long time.
And what about Shane? Obviously, he started well yesterday, but like, look, go back to the beginning. After a terrible start, 2 over after 2 holes in the first round, to get himself to where he got himself to, will he look at the back 9 yesterday and think, just too many mistakes?
I think so. I think that shot on 7, he was overhyped. Like it was 2 clubs out. You know, you don't mind 1 club out, but it was right down the flagstick as well. He probably adrenaline going as well. He got 2 under early. He knew he was playing well, but he conducted himself phenomenally well. I think Shane is an awful lot happier in the golf course. He's very happy with his game. He's putting well. And that show he put on, 62, almost a 61, a putt for a 61 on Saturday. He finished 3rd this year in the PGA 240. He won with Rory in New Orleans. And he's had an incredible year since the Ryder Cup. He's played phenomenal golf. And I think, you know, as I said about Schauffele, last week he was 2nd. Shane knows he's 3rd, he's 4th, he's tied 6th. He knows he's playing well. I think there's another major, hopefully, in him this year, or certainly give himself a chance. You can only give yourself a chance with 9 holes to play. That's all you can do. You can't control the way the field works. But I think he's playing good golf, and I'd like to see him pipping one, hopefully, before the end of the year.
With that in mind, then, will he take more confidence from this tournament? Will he come out of it with a positive mindset?
I think so. You know, we know how well he can play. He's a big-time player. He plays really well under pressure. And, you know, it's not easy to play in America. It's not easy to play in those type of golf courses. And he seems to have upped his game in those type of golf courses. They're not easy. They're big power golf courses. You have to putt well, hit irons in tight to the flags. There's a lot of bunkers, a lot of upslopes and greens. He seems to be... But just 2 iron shots, I think, just caught him out a little bit. And he sort of knocked him back a little bit and probably got a little bit negative on a few shots in the back 9, unfortunately. But it's all guns blazing. Like, you cannot lay up on any holes anymore in this game. You just there's no more course management. It's just stripe it off the tee, stripe it with your second shot, stripe it with your chip and putting. Like, you cannot make a mistake, as we've seen from the first and second, like three bogeys and one double bogey. It's just phenomenal standard the game is at right now.
And what about Rory then? You look at his scores, 8 bogeys, 1 double bogey, finishes on 12 under. It's just, again, it's those golf courses, isn't it?
Yeah, he finished 9 behind, 8 bogeys. He got to take the bogeys out, didn't make enough birdies. I think maybe the green speed could have changed from the first round to the second round for him, you know, with that heavy rain. And he just had a bad second round. Like, for Rory on the second round, 71, I think he shot, was like a 5 over par for him. And unfortunately, he threw himself out of the golf tournament in the second round. But look, he's still playing well. He's a hot commodity in the golf course at the moment. And hopefully, you know, he's 2 more majors left. He hasn't won a major for a very long time. But look, he has to do it at some stage, hopefully.
Here is hoping. Remy Burns, for now, we will leave our conversation there. Thank you very much for taking the call. We are taking a short break and then we are going to be chatting boxing in the company of Joe O'Neill from irishboxing.com. As Ruby mentioned at the top of the show, defeat for Tyson Fury, success for Alexander Usyk, and success for Ireland's Anto Kakachi. Stay with us in Game On.
Game On. Boxing.
Now it is time to chat boxing here on Game On with myself, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh, because Joe O'Neill from irishboxing.com joins us on the line to reflect on Alexander Usyk's victory over Tyson Fury. But you know what? I'm going to come at this with green tinted glasses. Before we talk about that, Joe O'Neill, talk to me about success for Anto Kakachi.
Hi, Shane. Thanks for having us on. Yeah, I'm delighted you're starting with Anto Kakachi because he's a bit of a forgotten man in Irish boxing. He's probably one of the unluckiest fighters we've had in a long time. He's been known to be a incredibly talented fighter. Anyone who's shared a ring with him sparring or in training camps would always talk just of how talented he is, how hard he punches. But between injuries and just bad luck and messing around with promoters and managers, he never really got his opportunity. He won the lightly regarded IBO title and the British title, but he had his big chance against Matchroom and Wales's Joe Cordina, who's a 2-time world champion. And yeah, he was a huge underdog. I think he was 4 or 5 to 1. And he just went in and ripped up the script. He dominated the fight and stopped Cordina in the 8. The writing was on the wall probably from the 3rd round on when he knocked Cordina down. And at 35 years of age and having been spoken about in sort of whispered tones for, God, over 10 years now at this stage, he's finally getting his just rewards.
Next, is there a big fight for him?
Apologies, Joe, Ruby. That was a technical error there on the line. The fader may have been down. It could be a technical error. Could have been a Shane Dawson error. Who knows, Ruby?
We're not going to pick you up on that.
You were posing a question to Joe, Ruby.
I am. Where does he go from here? What's the next step for Anto? I mean, is there a big fight on the cards? He's 35. Is there a big day for him?
Well, he spoke afterwards about wanting to go back to Saudi Arabia. And I know there are lots of qualms there, but at his stage in his career, he's looking at just trying to make as much money as possible and try to set his family up. Because he even mentioned after the fight that, like, coming into this, he was flat broke. And he's just looking to try to set up his family. And there is a guy called Sugar Nunes, who's also with Eddie Hearn's Matchroom, who is an absolute destroyer. Sort of in the mold of Kiko Martinez, maybe you Irish fans might recall, but that seems to be next on the agenda. There's also been talk of a rematch with Cordina because there was a little bit of controversy just in how the fight sort of swung in the 3rd round, Anto catching Cordina with a shot just after the referee called break. But by the sounds of it, Cordina is not long left at the super featherweight and he might be moving up. So it could be Sugar Nunes back in Saudi Arabia this October.
And that might be a genuine technical issue with that one, with Joe O'Neill.
You think about it, Shane, just listening to Joe there. You get to 35 years of age, flat broke before this fight. That is what he's looking for. He needs a payday. He's looking for a payday. Not everybody gets a payday.
For someone who's gone under the radar, as Joe was mentioning there, and admittedly, listen, I'm not a boxing expert, but to be able now to perform on the big stage is exactly what we want, and that is exactly what Joe was describing, who we now have back.
Yes, and sorry about that, guys. Yeah, Anto has always maybe been accused of sort of fighting to a level and sort of leaving his best stuff in the gym and maybe just doing enough to get over the line. And people spoke about we were going to have to see every aspect of all the stuff that was promised, all the guys who he's just sparred with, like Carl Frampton, former world champion, spoke about how he's probably the best person he's ever shared a ring with, the hardest puncher anyway. And Krejci got out there and took his chance. And yeah, in terms of like form lines and preparations, there really wasn't anything in the ring in his history to show that he could have done that. But everyone sort of knew, and everyone had a bit of a feeling that there was a big performance in there, and we're just delighted that he did finally get over the line.
Well, two lads who did get a big payday were Alexander Usyk and Tyson Fury, and did it live up to the billing in your humble opinion?
It did, yeah. It was a fight, inside the ring at least, it was a fight that defeated the undisputed heavyweight title, the first time in the four-belt era, first time in 25 years since Lennox Lewis, and yeah, it had everything. It was a high-level technical bout. It also had drama in it. There was momentum shifts, and you can't understate the rightful winner, I think, in most people's eyes. I know Tyson Fury wasn't particularly happy with the scoring, but I think on reflection he might see that he was beaten by the better man on Saturday night.
Was it always going to go the way of Usyk if it went the distance?
No, I don't think so, and I think it sort of adds to Usyk's legacy in a big way. The fight started and Usyk was sharp early, but like you have to realise that heavyweight, there's no weight limit, and he was given up half a foot in size and almost 3 stone in weight, and Fury sort of got on top from about the fourth round on, and he was hurting Usyk badly with those body shots. And for Usyk to come out in the 7th, 8th round to sort of just go on the attack against a much bigger opponent, he broke Fury's nose in the 8th and then obviously knocked him down in the 9th to change the It just changed the momentum of the fight completely. And this, like, when we were watching the fight, you were sort of thinking, round 5, round 6, it's only going one way here. And the size of Fury, like, the common boxing cliche is a good big man always beats a good little man. But Usyk just proved his class. And that's two weight divisions there. He's an undisputed champion in, along with an Olympic gold medal. Like, he's something special there.
It's obviously undisputed in cruiserweight as well. The first only other man was Evander Holyfield. But reading some of the reports that of the fight, did Fury get too long of a count in the 9th round? Some people have given out that they dragged it out and gave him every chance. Should it have been stopped? Could it have been stopped?
It could have. It could have been stopped even without a count, I think. But I believe maybe Fury's reputation, going back to that first Deontay Wilder fight, probably went a bit before him. Plus the magnitude of the fight, the referee Mark Nelson didn't want to be seen to be jumping in too early, so he did give Fury every chance. And yeah, the knockdown was finally called. It probably could have been called a few seconds earlier, the previous exchange, but thankfully it didn't affect the final outcome of the fight.
Yes, very much so. Will we see them go at it again?
Well, I think a lot of people in boxing are keen to see Usyk go out on top. Like, that was the perfect cap to a brilliant career. But when you're talking about the figures that were involved there, like, there's nothing officially announced, but the reports are that Fury made about €95 million, Usyk made €40 million. They have a rematch clause. It makes too much money for them, I think, to leave it unsaid.
$95 million?
$95 million, yeah, is the reported figure for Tyson Fury. And wow. I'm assuming those purses for a rematch would maybe tighten up a little bit. Maybe Usyk would be getting the lion's share in a rematch.
Wow.
That's what I was just going to ask. Surely, if there was a rematch, that the money goes the other way around, or is or is Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, still the biggest draw?
There probably wouldn't be as much of a disparity. Just from a fairness perspective, I would like to see Usyk maybe get a little bit more, but you're talking mega, mega money here.
Well, we shall see. Joe O'Neill from IrishBoxing.com, thank you very much for joining us. We're taking another short break, and then we are chatting Association Football with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly, so stick with us here. Lots to get through still here on Game On.
Game On.
Football.
Welcome back to Game On. And yesterday, Man City, of course, were crowned Premier League champions for the fourth year in a row. Stephen Kelly, that was hardly surprising.
No, I think Arsenal pushed them, Liverpool pushed them as well. It was nice to see that they had a title, but when it just gets to that point where you know City, you're going to have to be absolutely perfect to get over the title for them. And I know it was a couple of points in the end, but yeah, Arsenal dropping anything, then City just won't let up, and you know that's how close it is. Like, you know, even in sense of points, it wasn't as high as it has been over the last few seasons. You had crazy scores between Liverpool and City, but they're just a team that, when it comes to the finer details and making those moments count, they do it every year, and you just can't doubt them. You really can't.
Adam, we were discussing in the golf there about bogeys costing players, losing five games ultimately is what cost Arsenal. City only lost three.
Yeah, and it's very hard to be critical of them, Rue, because as you say, they've won the same amount of matches, 28. Arsenal actually drew less matches, 5. But as you say, those two defeats extra for Arsenal compares to Man City, who only lost 3. Same goal difference. They've a better defensive record, Arsenal, as well. So in terms of the pressure they were putting on and how well Arsenal have performed, nobody could accuse Arsenal of being bottlers or blowing it or anything like that. It's just the standards that Man City are setting in terms of you just can't have an off day. And there was one off day since Christmas for Arsenal, and that was that second half against Aston Villa. Other than that, they were flawless. They obviously played Man City away from home as well. It was the nil-all draw. They've won every other match. They've put up a phenomenal season. But this Man City team are just unbelievable, as we know, and the standards that they've been setting over the last number of years. And to win 4 on the bounce is really phenomenal. And to keep coming back, I listened to an interview with Rodri after the match, and the fact that they won the treble last year and he still spoke about the hunger and desire that, and how difficult that is to keep coming back. We'll never know how difficult it is, but for him to say that and to come back again this year and still have the drive, the determination, and even when the other teams we spoke about, obviously Shoffley and the pressure behind him and players coming behind you, horses coming behind you, and you know everybody's chasing you down, it must have been so difficult, and they still pulled it out of the bag, Man City. So it was frightening, really.
Giving the end result, 4 in a row champions, 6 and 7 seasons. Overall, Stephen Kelly, was this an enjoyable Premier League season for you?
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I think it was. There was moments where people were really questioning whether City were going to do it. Arsenal looked like they were in the. You know, that wasn't enjoyable for me when people thought Arsenal was going to win. That wasn't enjoyable, but
it would have been a lot less enjoyable if there was a different winner for you.
if it was red and white being lifting that trophy, it would be a lot less enjoyable. But no, it is. It's it was enjoyable because you know, Liverpool were in it. Arsenal, Tottenham were on top for a little bit. There was moments where a lot of teams are pushing, and City, you weren't sure if on the back of the treble whether they could have that kind of resilience and determination to go again. But it was ridiculous to even question that, because that's what this team does, that's what Pep does. But yeah, it was really enjoyable. There's some breakthrough players, some like the likes of Palmer going to Chelsea. There's my Chelsea, I'm sure we're getting that clip played soon. Chelsea in the end did well. And I think that there has been just, it shows that it's tight, teams are coming for them again. And yeah, you know, even the fact that Klopp is gone, that was another earthquake in the Premier League for him to be leaving. So, you know, things like that made it even more interesting.
Well, what about next year for Liverpool? No Jurgen Klopp. Did you listen to his speech at the end, in the middle of Anfield yesterday?
Yeah, and I heard Shane earlier saying it was a bit much. It probably was a bit much for me as well. But that's the nature, I suppose, of the world we live in nowadays. And to be fair to Klopp, he's been phenomenal. He really has. He's been a brilliant manager. And I think... maybe what we saw yesterday play out was the fact that not so much, obviously, his managerial performance, which has been phenomenal, and what he's done for Liverpool, but the connection he has with that city and supporters. I think that's what we've seen more
which
yesterday.
Which you need as
a Liverpool
manager. Of
course, and to be that figurehead, I was only looking at it yesterday, and to think you have all those people of one city in the palm of your hand. Like, you'd want to be some person to have that. And that's obviously what he's achieved. And he has been phenomenal. He really has. He's been an unbelievable manager. And you need those figureheads. You need those personalities, characters in the league to make it what it is as well. No matter what league you're in, we need them here. You're getting Stephen Kenny back. We're all talking about that. You need that in every sport. Jim McGuinness in the Gaelic. You need those type of figures in your sport. And I think he's been brilliant. He got the send-off. But it will be interesting, Ruby, because I always find when you have a figurehead at a club, the likes of Ferguson, Brian Cody, these fellas, it's very, very difficult for the next manager to win after them. So there's serious pressure on Arne Slot.
There most certainly is. Safe to say, Stephen Kelly, that Aston Villa were the find of the season.
Yeah. You know, again, they were top. Well, they could have gone top over Christmas, missed out on a couple of performances, but the all-round game, the way they played, you know, it was exciting. It's fun to watch. They just had the resilience about them as well that you didn't expect. And, you know, they're a couple of games away from really pushing that top two, top three, and to be in a position where they are. And that was competing in Europe as well, which would have taken its toll, because when you're in a European competition as well for a team like Aston Villa, who they have the resources, but they wouldn't have invested as heavily in the squad as other teams would that are in it week in, week out, or year in, year out. So for them to be in the position where they finished in the Champions League slot is remarkable, even though it was to, you know, Pip and my team, but they deserve it. They you know, to go toe-to-toe with Arsenal, and, you know, they're effectively what probably cost Arsenal the title was Aston Villa, Unai Emery, which I'm sure he's loving the fact that it didn't go well there for him, and he's the one that's taken those few points off them that's cost them, effectively.
He most certainly did. Biggest underachievers, Alan, United?
United, definitely, yeah. Absolutely, Ruby. I think when you look finishing eighth place, the inconsistencies all year, every week we seem to speak about problems and in the games and mistakes and even the lack of application and effort and problems and issues. And we had some evenings we had sympathy for Ten Hag. Other nights we were critical of him, but ultimately he's the manager and I think the buck stops with him, as we know. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, the cup final on Saturday. People are thinking if they win the cup final, it'd be harsh to maybe sack a manager, but I'd be shocked if he's there next year. When you think Jim Ratcliffe coming in, obviously trying to change a whole environment and a culture and a ground and a roof and everything else, I'd be shocked if the manager is there. I just think he is totally underperformed. And I spoke about figureheads at your club, and if they want to get to the level, which of course they do, of the Guardiolas and Liverpool at Klopp and even Arteta, what he's built at Arsenal, they have to get a top quality elite manager, and I don't think Ten Hag has performed anywhere near looking like he's going to become that elite manager.
So that might be another manager who leaves. One manager that is definitely gone, well, a couple. David Moyes is definitely out the door. Julian Lopetegui linked with West Ham. Roberto De Zerbi left fairly abruptly, Stephen. And from an Irish point of view, oh, so it's very difficult to say because we don't know who's coming in, but how might that affect Evan Ferguson? Were you shocked with De Zerbi departing Brighton?
I have to admit, I can't say I was shocked. I think after their exit from when they were in Europe, there was a couple of rumblings came out, and he said stuff in the press that kind of went against the grain of what that club do and how they buy in players and stuff. So I kind of thought maybe he's rubbing the board up the wrong way here. And I think the way he's conducted himself, actually, I think Brighton have dropped off, and I think that it's been making an easy decision for the Brighton board because of the last 10 games. They just haven't performed that well. But that said, they've missed some massively key players that were probably instrumental last season. Matoma was huge for them. Solly Marsh was absolutely astronomical last season. So those players have missed effectively most of the season, and they were two of their go-to. Evan Ferguson has dropped off. You know, not that we're enjoying that, but I think he got a lot less game time than we would have liked as well. So yeah, I wasn't shocked that he's gone, and I think he seems like I don't think he'd be the easiest character to deal with if you're an owner of a club. So maybe that's probably part of the parcel of why it's gone. But it'd be interesting to see where he ends up.
It will indeed. Alan, Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United came up and went straight back down. Hardly surprising after you watched them early, was it?
No, it wasn't. But one team out of those three that really disappointed me, and that was Burnley. I just felt the way they came up last year, Ruby, and the way they dismantled everybody in the Championship, I was expecting them to make a real good fist of it. And I was disappointed with Kompany, who was such a brilliant player and obviously had experience of the Premier League, loads of experience. I just thought, obviously, he has a way of playing, and that's fine, and all the managers now have a style of playing and identity about them. But he just persisted with it, despite the fact that it was getting them nowhere. And you have to adjust. That's management for me. If something's not going your way or not going right, if you keep repeating the same mistakes over and over, eventually you're going to get your result, what the God was, which was relegation. And I was just a little bit disappointed with him. I thought he'd have more to offer. I thought Luton were a breath of fresh air. Everybody had them written off before a ball was kicked. And I think, to be fair, you look at their manager and how they went about things. I thought they were phenomenal, Luton. I thought they made a real, real fist of it. But it's no surprise, as you say. And that's just the gap, what we're seeing now, Ruby, in terms of, I suppose, the jump from the Championship to the Premier League. Now, when you look at the Championship and what's come up, I think the clubs that are going to come up this year, I think they'll have far better resources versus and make a better fist of staying in the division, which will be obviously Leicester, Ipswich, and the winner of the playoff on Sunday, which will be Leeds and Southampton. Far bigger clubs than the likes of Burnley and Luton.
Okay, gentlemen, it is time.
The awards.
Mm-hmm. The Game On Awards. Stephen Kelly, I'll come to you first because Alan Colley was last on the mic there. Player of the season and also highlight of the season for Stephen Kelly.
Player of the season, I'm going to just be so boring given to Phil Foden. It was him, tossed up between him and Palmer, but I think Foden pips it. I think the pressure that's on at that club, the on by that manager, the levels he played at, and then in the final day to score two goals like he did when key moments, I think he's been sensational. He's just an unbelievable talent, and yeah, I think it has to be Phil Foden. I think his all-round game has been exceptional, so yeah, I give it to him.
And highlight of the season, Stephen, before we come to Alan, you have a bit of time to think about your answers now, Alan, because I'm grilling
Stephen. I have them.
I asked him, he has them lined up. My highlight of the season would be, let me think, Stephen. Arsenal not winning it. For me, that's terrible. Oh, that's terrible, isn't it?
That's the small town mentality. That's Minnowism, Stephen.
Roy Keane's been shouting about for 25 years about the Spurs crowd.
You take your silver linings out, Collie, when they come.
I don't agree with it.
That is actually a joke. No, I can't say that. No, I think Arsenal are amazing. My silver lining would be, I think, watching Palace the last few games, the last 10 games have just been unbelievable for me. Eze and Elise, those two players have just absolutely blown me away when they performed all season. I think they're exceptional. I loved watching them. I've seen them live about 6-7 occasions, and they've entertained and been outstanding every time I watch them. So for me, the players I've enjoyed watching most, and so as Eze and Elise, I think they've been unreal.
Be difficult for Palace to keep them now for next season. Alan Colley, same questions to yourself.
Yeah, I don't think it's boring to say Phil Foden and all, because he's been an absolute superstar. He really is. 23 years of age, 19 Premier League goals, been involved in everything good with Man City this year. Stepped up when De Bruyne obviously was missing for so long as well. He's been absolutely unreal, and it'll be interesting to see if England, obviously, who have aspirations to win the Euros, and the pressure will be on Southgate, how he gets a tune out of him. But he's just a phenomenal football player. And only going to get better as well. So he's my player of the year. The highlight in what has been such a disappointing season for Man United, I thought Garnacho's goal was absolutely unbelievable, the bicycle kick against Everton earlier in the season. And to be fair to him, Garnacho, he has been their shining light. He has shown all the qualities that you would associate with maybe a young player breaking through at Man United, even the heart and desire, and he runs and he works. So I thought his goal, and I think it's worth a mention as well, Unai Emery, because I felt he was harshly treated at Arsenal, and not just by Arsenal as a club, but by England and English people nearly, and how he was disrespected when he came in firstly at Arsenal. And for him to come back and perform as well as he has at Aston Villa, I think he's been absolutely brilliant.
Ruby, Phil Foden, your player of the season as well?
Yeah, I'd say people really want to know who my player of the season was.
Come on, Ruby, give us one.
If you're going to go with Unai Emery, I think Sean Dyche deserves a mention too.
The job
he's done at Everton.
Very much so. Listen, we've 30 seconds left. Stephen Kelly, thank you very much for taking a phone call. Alan Colley, just briefly, because I know you're on the road to Winchacore to watch Stephen Kenny versus Damien Duff, Rovers Derry as well this evening. How do you see this evening's League of Ireland match?
I'm really looking forward to this, Shane. You can sense the excitement all night, but I'm Kenny and Duff, it should be brilliant. But I fancy Shelburne, who did get the win on Friday, a much needed win. It's hard to believe 2 wins in 9 and they were still top of the league or something.
Yeah.
So they needed that on Friday night, and I think they might get the victory again tonight, but should be a cracker and a beautiful evening in Dublin.
Can Rovers steady the ship against Derry, Al?
I think they need to, Ruby, because obviously up to now we've all been saying, oh well, they're going to kick into gear, and Stephen Bradley is saying he wasn't concerned, but he has to be concerned after losing to Dundalk and the way things have gone so far. And there's a 6-point gap now as well, Ruby. They don't want to let Shelburne get any further ahead.
Well,
they've only got 5 in the last 15.
It's there you go. It's really poor, like, and obviously Derry as well, who picked up another victory at the weekend as well, and they're in Tala tonight. If Derry were to beat them, the confidence that will give them, all of a sudden there's a little bit of a pressure on Shamrock Rovers.
Here's hoping the title race continues at pace. That is all we have time for. If you're in the Inchicore area or Tala area, or indeed the Wexford area, Wexford are playing Cove Ramblers, get down to a League of Ireland match. Ruby, that is all we have time for.
It is. Thank you very much, Shane Dawson. Thanks to John Farrell, who produced today. We're both back tomorrow, are we? I know I am.
We are indeed. The two of us are reunited once again at 6 o'clock tomorrow, but don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 2FM, because the brilliant Beda De Silva is up with some cracking music from all of the Game On team. Thank you for tuning in. We'll chat to you again tomorrow.